So, since you're all the ones who are sitting right in front of me, so good evening to all of you, and good afternoon to some of you, and good morning to many of you. Happy New Year to everyone, and I've been asked to say something on this new year. I agree to it mainly because it saves me the trouble of writing a letter and wishing. But of course, from our heart, we really want to wish all of you a very, very wonderful Happy New Year. Sometimes we are expected to write this New Year letter. And oftentimes I think that while it is good in some sense, but on the other hand, you don't want to start off a year with somebody always sort of preaching things that you already know and things that you already are aware of. So the modern technology allows us to simply sort of see you all and speak with you directly. And I think this is a wonderful medium through which we can wish all of you. I have many of your Sangha friends here with me at Mindrolling here. And we all together from Mindrolling would like to begin by wishing everyone a most wonderful, happy, harmonious, and auspicious 2017. And we hope that as we begin with this new year, that this new year will be filled with a lot of good health and happiness and peace, and especially deep in practice, since most of us are all working with the Dharma practices. So what can we mention in this New Year's Day? What I feel is New Year gives us all an opportunity to start something new, to really be able to look forward to in the future, this coming year, with greater aspirations of every goodness that we can aspire for. It also provides us with a renewed outlook and renewed inspiration and encouragement, and hopefully a lot of courage and hope, especially given the fact that we've had a very intensive year. For many of us, various years, each have their highs and lows. And for some, while it may have been a quiet and a much more simple year, but I think it would be fair to say that for many of us around the world, as many of you have written, 2016 has been a very intensive year. And I think the word intensive is very, very apt in the sense of all the wonderful things that has happened, especially for Buddhist practitioners, Vajrayana Buddhist practitioners, where we celebrate Guru Rinpoche's year as the monkey year. And a monkey year is always filled with a lot of wonderful events throughout our Buddhist world. And likewise, Mindrolling has been very, very filled with a lot of wonderful ceremonies and wonderful events, many of which were participated by all of our friends from around the world. And so from one aspect, I would say it has been a year filled with a lot of teachings, a lot of practices, pilgrimages, and a lot of ceremonies, and a lot of, I think, effort put into retreat and practice and study of the Dharma, which has, I think, we can look back to 2016 as an exhaustive year of aspirations of practice and effort in practice. Also, however, within the mundane world, it has been a very interesting year. It has been, as I said, an intensive year with a lot of upheavals. The situation that we have around the world is not necessarily something nice in many situations. While all of the different violences and hatred and biases and discrimination, different kinds of events that have shaken us all with a lot of sadness and grief have happened in this year, 2016. Politically, it has been a very interesting year, intensive year, not only in the Western world, but also in the Eastern world. We're still going through it. However, through all of these many events, especially with all the political situations around the different parts of the world, especially in the United States, I experienced, especially in the last 2-3 months, a lot of emails and messages that came in from many of you while I was in retreat about how to relate to this kind of a year, how to relate to the many changes that we all face, how to relate to events that are not necessarily what we expect or what we like. And as practitioners, how can we look at these situations and what kind of an attitude we should have towards these situations. And one of the reasons is being in retreat, I didn't have so much of a freedom to write about it. And secondly, I didn't also intentionally write much because I thought that throughout the year, throughout the many years and throughout your lives, so many of you have wonderful opportunities to receive teachings from many great, wonderful teachers. I have known many of you to be very dedicated, devoted students of the Dharma, and have learned and studied and understood and heard many of the teachings. So as a Dharma practitioner, there's really nothing different that we can add to every particular situation, whatever situation happens, whether it is extraordinarily good and as we expect it to be, or whether it is it happens to be especially an event or any kind of an occurrence that is not exactly what we expect it to be in times of challenges, in times of pain, in times of grief, in times of sadness too. All that what we have heard, understood, and reflected upon from our teachings and the teachings that we have received are applicable to every situation. There is no one situation or a question that has a different answer or a different approach. Dharma is one unifying, the view of Dharma is one unified view that has the potential of encompassing and being able to really relate to every situation. And that is what, if we keep reminding ourselves with the perspective with which we need to look at all things. But having said that, one of the interesting things that stood out in the many messages that almost all of them had the same sort of the line, how can we relate to this? How should we look at this situation? Especially when you hear about racism and a lot of violence, when we hear about a lot of the terrorist attacks that happen around the world, when we see elections, the results of the elections, when we see countries vote to exit or to stay, when we see different, many such occurrences that happen globally, how should we relate to this? How should we actually look at this? And of course, interestingly enough, I think people who are within the Buddhist world, and I think it can be in all spiritual fields, but especially speaking within a Buddhist sangha or a Buddhist community, I have known that social activism and Buddhist ideologies are very strong in a lot of people. As Buddhist practitioners, kindness, compassion, being aware, being able to have the courage to really go forward with ethics and principle in life are so very strong that because of it, this social activism and being aware as citizens of different countries, also being part of many different projects or different kinds of organizations, especially nonprofit organizations that work towards helping others, that work towards services, are things that many Buddhists are very, very connected to. And this is wonderful. This is, I think, really, really something that can bridge the gap of view and actions. But what it does is, because of that background, as practitioners, we feel, I think, even more strongly when situations in the world happen and it impacts us, and we are aware, and that awareness tends to, I think, magnify any kind of a situation, and we feel very strongly about it. So from that perspective, many times when you question about how to deal with this situation, how can, as a practitioner, can we resolve, or can we, in our minds, find a way to really be peaceful with whatever is happening around the world? Should we act against it? Should we say something? Should we just be patient with that situation? How should we look at it? And those questions were very, very strong, and I received many, many messages with this kind of a standpoint. And in all that, the messages that I read, and I have been thinking about it a lot lately. And one thing I do find that really stands out, speaking to practitioners especially, is again and again, what I found was the absence of two important things that I felt as practitioners we all need to keep in mind. When you feel very strongly, whether in a good situation, whether in a, especially in a bad situation, when you feel very strongly, one of the most important things as practitioners that we need to keep in mind is change and impermanence. And in many of those letters where you poured out your heart and asked those questions, I felt that one of the weaker perspectives was almost seeing a certain event or an experience with tremendous sense of it becoming more solid than it is, more permanent than it is. And Dharma, throughout our teachings and our practices, emphasizes the need to keep in mind impermanence. Just as a good thing passes into something else, any negative event, no matter how difficult it is, no matter how much it is something that is not necessarily according to our expectations and aspirations, a practitioner's perspective has to have a little bit of a stepping a little bit back and not being so submerged or drowned within it, but a little bit coming, stepping backwards, and then sort of keeping what the Buddha always in his teachings mentioned as, this will also pass, this shall also pass, this will also pass. What that allows us to do is not sort of be very, sort of take a very passive approach, but what it does allow, the understanding of an impermanence of any moment, of any event, of any experience, allows us to really look at it, things from a broader, much more vaster perspective than to being so linearly sort of pinpointing to just one situation, that the one situation completely sort of envelops and overshadows the bigger picture of life in general, and the many good things that actually come out from even a negative situation, as unfortunate as it might be. So one of the, I don't think it's an advice, but a reminder maybe, what I could suggest is to always keep in mind, whatever you experience, yes, it is an experience, it's very impactful, but this will also pass. This is also impermanence, the world and samsara, as it circles, and the cycle of it is that everything has a momentum, everything is in movement, everything is in constant change, constant transformation. So keep impermanence in mind, and trust the blessings of all the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas in whichever situation it may be, especially in the difficult situations. The second, I think, point that I felt was missing in many of your letters was, I think, the understanding of interdependence, just as impermanence is such an integral and important aspect of the Buddhist view. Second to that, or as important, is the understanding of interdependence, that whatever we experience comes to, into being because of many different situations. We are all interconnected, and therefore the codependency and the interdependentness of everything brings into situations many different events and occurrences in our individual life and globally as well. So therefore, no one single person or an event or situation can be completely blamed for. There's so many reasons, so many factors that happens all the time. And then the interdependences of the different situation brings into fruition certain events and certain things, and it could be just a result of many, many years and many, many events and even lifetimes of karma causes that we have all created and participated for. So when we speak about someone, when we think about something, when we feel the pain or the grief or the unhappiness or even the good things and the happinesses and the joys that we experience, there, as a practitioner, has to be a sense of keeping a very pervasive view, again, of interdependent origination and how all things come into being and how everything has a cause, and the cause is something that we all participate in. And so it's always very convenient when we blame one person or when we blame one situation or one experience or an event. But it's just, if we look carefully at it from the Dharma's perspective, not a single thing that we can blame as the only reason why certain events happen, certain things happen. So do keep in mind both impermanence and interdependence, the two truths, as the Buddha has always taught. And perhaps out of that, what we can look forward to in the future is to know that the change that will happen and that always happens can be made to be something that is freer of ignorance, freer of the anger, freer of all the negativities. And that since things come into being because of interdependence, that we should all become even more aware based upon the experiences and the knowledge of the past and how we can now make things better and how we can all participate together to really bringing about a better year, a better future, especially for the next generation. Many of the things that we begin to become more aware of now may not necessarily yield the result even in our lifetime, sometimes maybe not, but for the next generation. And as the world continues, it is what we are responsible for. And therefore, greater strength, if anything we've learned from the past year, is greater emphasis and greater effort, greater hope and greater courage put into making things more better and bringing into planting seeds and bringing things into a sense of creation of goodness. Because I think in some ways, this world has come to a point where there's a lot of good things already there. I really think we have a lot of good learned people. We have a lot of powerful people. We have a lot of wealthy people. We have a lot of wise people. And probably one area that we all need to work much more harder is to create more good people. Simply good. Just truly, if we all could emphasize developing good heart, kind heart, a genuine good heart, then probably that is what the world will most benefit from. We can right what is we feel is wrong. We can continue the good to become more stronger. And everywhere in an individual and in a group or a collective level, basic goodness, the human potential of genuine kindness, genuine goodness, actions, physical actions that are kind and good, verbally speaking something that is kind and good, and training your mind to generate good thoughts, to have harmony within, and from the base of that harmony within, that you can share and then contribute to the harmony of the others and the environment. I think that is what we all need to commit ourselves to and become aware. of that responsibility. Other than that, I think being the year of Guru Rinpoche, one of the things, because the monkey year is also celebrated as Guru Rinpoche's year, I really felt at times, and I was speaking with Jetsun Lad also about it, that it truly is a year that probably was completely designed by Guru Rinpoche himself. If there ever was a year to for that would encourage us to wake up to what a chaos we can create within and outside of ourselves, then this was a year that saw the goodness and what good we can create, the amount of practice that we can actually do, as well as the chaos and the confusion that we can create within a world. I think Guru Rinpoche really, with his blessings and his presence, was able to really clearly present that to all of us to see. And so therefore, it was a year filled with the reminder of Guru Rinpoche and his teachings. And from that, I think we need to, if anything at all, learn to really commit ourselves to the Dharma practices even more so. Interestingly, a few days ago, some of the monks and the nuns were in an argument, nothing big, but just a general argument. And I overheard them because some of the older ones were trying to sort of resolve, bring the situation into a resolving. And there were two groups of people who were having a heated argument. And one of the senior nuns, I overheard, I was passing by and I overheard. And one of the senior nuns was telling the younger ones who were arguing with one another, and she was saying, all of you study the Dharma, and therefore, what is it that you all take from the Dharma? The view of the Dharma that you are all studying, it is that view that you should now, at this moment, be bringing into action. And both of the factions, or the arguing groups, sort of jointly looked at the older nun and very sharply said to her, don't remind us of what the view of the Dharma is. We know you shouldn't tell us what to do and what not to do. And I found that really very funny. And I laughed out loud. And I've been teasing them about it because why not? You know, as Dharma practitioners, we really don't have the luxury of saying, I don't want to remember the view of the Dharma in this moment, because this moment is something different from the view of the Dharma. So the view of the Dharma at all times has to be relevant. It has to be relevant in situations that are to our liking. And even more so, it has to be very relevant to those things that we don't necessarily expect or like. And therefore, it's very important that we all remind ourselves as we enter into a new year that we keep the view of the Dharma in mind, and as much as possible, try to integrate that into our lives. And in that way, again, there's all the teachings are there, as I said in the beginning, that you have heard so far, whether it is the refuge, whether it is generation of bodhicitta, whether it is the four immeasurables or the four reminders, whether it's the six paramitas or the 10 paramitas, the truth of impermanence and interdependence, whether it is the nature of emptiness, whether it's creation and completion, whether it's shamatha and vipassana, whatever it is, the whole spectrum of Dharma teachings that you have received in your life, you have to really take that into your everyday moment and keep it seamless and continue. The permeating view of the Dharma has to be continuously flowing through you as you encounter the different moments of your life. So with regard to any specific thing that I can mention there, it isn't necessary, but it has been sort of always been a tradition to give out a few instructions. And so in lieu of that, then what I can say is perhaps this year we could look at 8 things that would be good to work with. And as I always say, you should try it, and I will try to do it myself. And let's all see how far we get through with this in 2017. The eight practices that I would like all of us to keep in mind in this new year is to try and free yourself from the tendencies of control, sort of really free from these eight things from the domain of self and the habits of the self trying to control it. So in that, work first with sound. Allow sound to be free from the domain of the self and the control of the self. Sometimes we are trying to sit in a situation and you may hear lots of sound, pleasant sounds, or it could be unpleasant sounds. It could be a lot of chit-chat or loud music. It could be a neighbor. It could be a whole campus filled with tourists like we had today on the New Year Day when the entire stupa grounds were filled with thousands of tourists trying to celebrate New Year, and which sort of imprisoned all of us and we weren't able to go out much. And then you hear a lot of just chatter all around you. And not necessarily the sound that you like, especially if you're trying to be in retreat and stay in a monastery, but it could also be traffic sounds. Now there's a moment when you hear those sounds and you tend to want to immediately, the self wants to control it. You want it to either up the volume, or you want it, the volume to be less, you want it to be sound to become silent, you want the silent to become sound. It's not a good sound, you like it or you don't like it. So this year it would be good if all of us could just simply practice letting sound be free from the domain of self's control. And you will find in that moment that every sound has the ability, the capacity to become sweet music. Within this retreat, the last retreat that I was in, it's something that I have been trying to practice and work with, is that you have to develop friendship with the sound. When you really relax with whatever sound or no sound that is around you, there's a melody to that momentum of the sound. Even the worst of the sounds, when you sort of let yourself be at peace with it, sound does then transform into melodious music. In the same way, work with the second step, and that would be movement. And whatever movement, physical movement, let the movement of your body train to try and allow it to be free from the domain of self and the self trying to control it. Especially as practitioners, I think this year I would like all of us as much as possible to try and commit ourselves to being flexible with our body. It could be anything, go for walks or do yoga or do any other kind of exercises, gardening, whatever it is, but allow movement of the physical movement of the body to be specially at service of the others. Physically do something that makes another person enjoy the space, whether it is with a beautiful garden, whether it is with your cooking, whether it is by cleaning and sweeping. And I think this is why so many of the old sages and the great teachers within Mahayana and the Zen tradition and the Vajrayana tradition emphasized so much physical service. And I'm beginning to more and more understand the value of it, is that where there is movement of the body that is freed from the domain of self trying to control it, I'm going to sit in a particular way. This is my preferred posture. I like to sit in this way. I don't want to move. When that kind of a self's control on the physical body comes in, I think it makes a person more and more sort of sustain and make more strong and impactful self-cherishing and self-attachment. So in order to counteract that, to defeat that, as much as possible, I would encourage you to allow movement, physical movement, to be free from the domain of self and the self's control. And in that way, I think you understand the whole concept of gar, or what is called gar in Tibetan, or dance. Just the physical movement becomes dance. It becomes a beautiful mudra, an expression, physical expression, a mudra, or a gar of being able to truly sustain a much more awareness of the environment, the needs of the others, and an ability to go beyond the self and the self-attachment and the self-importance. Third thing I would like you to keep in mind is to let your smile be free from the domain of self and self's control. Very oftentimes, I used to, in my school days, have a teacher who used to sometimes tell us, don't be stingy with your smile. And going through some of my old books and notebooks, recently I read that line from my school teacher, class teacher, who had written, don't be stingy with your smile. And I really think that that is very true, is that let your smile be free from the domain of self and the self's control, and you will find that it becomes laughter. Sadly enough, simple as it is, you know, but what I find today is we don't laugh as much, and we are very stingy with even our laughter, and it is so, everything is so very serious, especially for practitioners. You know, we are serious with our practice, we are serious with what we do, we are serious with even walking up the hill, we are serious with where we sit, we are serious with everything. And sometimes being serious is good, but one would so much enjoy much more a nice laughter, and to being able to have that simple laughter, the joy. Occasionally when we go to different places, especially in the East, you find, I don't know whether you have that in the West so much, but in India especially, we have a lot of, now it's a new thing, but it's growing, where we have a lot of what are called laughter clubs, where especially the senior citizens are brought in the early mornings into parks. They all meet in the parks, and then they laugh loudly. They fling their arms up and they laugh, and for no reason, just somebody just starts and then they laugh. And it's said to be very, very therapeutic. And I've been looking at it, and I think that's so very nice. But it's also so very sad that we have to have clubs and somebody actually leading us to laughter, and that we have to always look for causes of laughter. And when we say laugh, then somebody says, why? Why should we laugh? It's a very short life, you know. And how serious do you want to be with it all the time, and for what? It would be so nice, so much better, especially when you do have all of the chaos and the confusion and everywhere, whatever is happening, a good laugh might be just the right medicine for all of us. And therefore, a good laugh starts with when you allow your smile to be a little bit free from the domain of self-control, where you're trying to only give those very, what I call, intelligent smile. When even, you know, sometimes you come across people in conversation where even the smile is so measured and makes you very uncomfortable when you are the only one who's really laughing or smiling, because you sort of look foolish. And so you have to all be very serious to be wise and profound. So this year might be a good year if you really want to say, how can I deal and handle all of the challenges that are around in the world today. Give yourself sometimes moments of laughter. Watch a funny movie, or laugh with your friends, or join a laughter club, or laugh on your own, or laugh with the others. But the start for it would be, is always by letting the smile be a little bit free from the control of the self. In the same way, probably what you could work with in terms of the fourth step is to allow life to be free from the control, the domain of control of one's own self. Now, what do I mean by that is, you may not be able to think about large amount of time. But a moment to moment, whenever you have the possibility, allow your life and this moment to be a little bit free from the domain of self-control. You can't plan everything. And one of the sad things is when today it's so common for us to plan out everything that there is no spontaneity of any given moment. So from time to time, if not a lot, encourage yourself to allowing your this moment, now, today, here and now, your life to be a little bit freer from the domain and the control of self, and you will find that moment to be a celebration immediately. We don't need to celebrate in what today has become celebration. You don't have to go to a particular place. You don't have to spend a lot of money. You don't have to do anything extraordinary. If in this moment, here and now, if you could just simply enjoy and be genuinely open to whatever arises within that spontaneous moment, you will find celebration immediately in that moment. So allow your life to be a little bit freer from the control and the domain of one's own self. In the same way, fifth step is to allow yourself from time to time, and if possible, begin the day by surrendering a time, a moment in that given moment, from all kinds of plans and agendas. Free yourself from the domain of trying to controlling everything that you are doing in life. Free from plans, free from schedules, and in its stead, surrender yourself to a given moment, any one moment, where you are able to fill your mind with gratitude. Gratitude to your parents, gratitude to your family, to your friends, spouses, brothers and sisters, children, uncles and aunts, neighbors, and especially gratitude to your teacher, gratitude to all the lineage masters, gratitude to all those great beings, enlightened beings, who have directly and indirectly allowed each one of us to recognize and work in developing our human potential. And in that given one single moment of surrendering to a moment of understanding and recognizing gratitude, you will always find devotion arising in that. Many people ask about devotion, what devotion means, and it's a very big topic, but one simple and poignant ways which captures what devotion is a true moment of humility and gratitude. Gratitude to all the goodness that arises from a source and being grateful to that source. That's devotion. So therefore, work with this. As you would, I would encourage you to working with the sixth step, and that is let your mind be free from the domain and the control of the self. Free your mind. Just allow your mind to be completely vast and resting without the self trying to control it in being in a particular way. And when you allow your mind to be free from the domain and the control of the self, you will always find meditation. A few days ago, I was speaking with some of the young people, and the topic turned towards meditation. And in that small group, there were some who were interested in meditation. And there was one particular person who was sort of the group leader. And the questions just went, and everybody just sort of looked at him and said, you know, do you meditate? But even before they could suggest him being interested in meditation or whatever it is, he immediately looked at me and he said, no, I don't meditate. I am too restless. I cannot sit quietly. And he did have a habit of shaking his legs while sitting and talking to other people. And he said, look, I can't even keep my legs still for even a little while. I'm so restless. I have to be in movement all the time. So because I can't sit still, therefore I can't meditate. And while at that time it wasn't the right moment to say anything about it, we all just left it at that. But it got me to really thinking about what goes on in the minds of many people. Many people who do have wonderful teachers and teachings and have meditated. Perhaps many of you know what meditation really means. But generally speaking, I think a lot of people think meditation is sitting very quietly and being without thoughts and just sitting still. And they find that tremendously difficult. And oftentimes when people are curious about meditation, they always say, how can you sit quietly? How can you sit still for so many long hours? When they see monks and nuns meditating, a lot of the people who are passing by in the shrine room sort of look at them and say, this is how they sit for hours and hours. It's called meditation. That's one kind of meditation. That's one aspect of meditation. But is that all meditation is about? What is meditation? And we have to keep in mind that forms and techniques and different aspects and instructions that give us the opportunity to developing insight are aspects of meditation. But on the other hand, the real characteristic of meditation is mind meeting its own nature and being able to remain within that. And it doesn't have to be restricted to being in a still body. Your body could be moving. Your body could be anywhere. Your body could be engaging in any kind of activity, and yet one would be meditating. And therefore, the key to cultivating such a meditation that would directly be working with the nature would be is to allow the mind to being free from the control of self. So while you are going for that walk or you're engaged in the activity, moment to moment, from one moment to the moment, as you pass through the day, give yourself many such small moments of opportunities where you allow mind to be a little bit freer from the habit of trying to always control it. Sit like this, think like this, talk like this, work like this, question this way, find the answer this way, be satisfied with it, not be satisfied this way, sit this way, don't sit this way. Instead of doing that, if you simply free the mind, give it a respite from the enormous habitual ways of trying to shape it and form it. In those moments where you free the mind from the control of the self, you will find genuinely the face of the nature of your own self, and therefore that would be then truly engaging in meditation. Then seventh, I would say, is work with freeing feelings from the domain of self-control, self and the control of the self. In the same way as you would allow breeze, when a very cool breeze blows and it touches your skin and the breeze just passes by, train as practitioners to allowing feelings to blow like a breeze and allowing it to pass on into the next moment. When you don't allow the breeze of the feeling to be given the freedom to flow on, that's where the feelings begin to then really become more solid and impactful. Time to time, even if you can't do it all the time, but whenever strong feeling especially arises, immediately keep the example of a breeze. And when you let it pass by and free it from the tendency to control, self's control of how you want the feeling to then act, react, become, not become, come closer, not come closer, relate to something or not. When you free it from that tendency and the habit of controlling it, you will find that immediately within that moment, you come much more closer to the basic nature. What is the nature of mind is a question we all work with. Nature of mind is when you allow all that what covers it to be freed. and that you don't try to control the nature and develop or transform it into something else. So try as much as possible to keep yourself reminded, to let feelings be free from the domain of self and self's control, and you will find a moment of resting within the nature itself. Then the earth, I would say, is work with trying to free, especially now those of you who are who have been studying Dhamma for many years now, and those of you especially who I know, my good friends who are in retreat at Lotus Garden at this time, I would say try to free the nature of emptiness from the domain of self and self's control. This is emptiness. Emptiness must be like this. So everything is emptiness. This is that kind of emptiness. When you try to structure emptiness, then you don't see emptiness. You get so struck or you get stuck in that moment. So free the nature, the reality of all phenomena, which is emptiness, from the domain of self and self's control, and you will find in that moment natural bliss. Bliss and emptiness, when we say, is when that bliss is the spontaneous, pervasive nature that arises when the emptiness is freed from the control of self. So, if you need numbers or some particular thing to start off your new year, these are the 8 things that you could work with. As much as possible, work with letting sound be free so that everything can arise as music. Let movement be free from the domain of self so everything can arise as a dance. Let smile be free from the self and the domain of self so that it can become laughter. Let life be free from the domain of self and its control, and you will find celebration at all times. Let yourself surrender into a single moment with gratitude, freeing it from the domain of self and its control, and you will find devotion. Free mind from the domain of self and its control, you'll find meditation. Free feelings from the domain of self and its control, and you will immediately find nature. Free emptiness from the domain of self and its control, and there's bliss. And so work with these. As usual is with the number, you could go on and add it in many different ways, but 8 is always an auspicious number, so we could start with 8. And then in my own sort of habitual ways, I like to every day read something in the morning. Nothing long. I don't like to read something very long in the morning, but to read small passages or quotes or some verses, inspiring verses, that sort of sets me off in the day. And this morning I woke up on this New Year's morning and I was just going through some of the books that are on my table. And I this morning I just opened the book to find a wonderful, wonderful little anecdote, which I would like to then share with all of you. It is said that the anecdote is of a thief who one day decided that he was going to go to a nearby hut where a Zen master lived and go and steal whatever the master had. So he waited for the Zen master to go away, and he walks up to the hut of the Zen teacher and goes in to steal things, and then unfortunately doesn't find anything. He didn't have anything in this hut. And so not finding anything, he left the hut and walked down and chanced upon the Zen teacher walking up the hill back to his hut with a pile of wood that he had been picking. And the Zen teacher then stops the thief on the way and says, "Oh, you must have gone to steal something from my hut. Unfortunately, I don't have anything. And so poor you, you know, it's so sad that you are leaving with nothing. And so let me take my clothes off and give it to you, and at least you'll have something." So he took off his clothes, gave it to this very bewildered thief who didn't know what to make out of it. And he kept walking on, and this bewildered thief walked down with the teacher's robes. And a little way off, after climbing a little way up, the teacher looked down and is said to have said, "Oh, that poor man, I wish I could have given him the beautiful boon that is in the sky, but at this moment he'll just have to do with my old robes." And I thought that this was a wonderful, wonderful little anecdote, probably that would best say everything or capture everything that I would like to convey to you today on this New Year day, is that there are so many wonderful, wonderful, beautiful things in this world that are still there at no cost, requiring no effort, no great agendas and planning. There's the beautiful sun that is shining out there in some countries. There's a wonderful storm, that's a thunderstorm that we are happening, that's happening outside here in Mindroling in India. There's a moon, beautiful moon up in the sky in many countries. Beautiful flowers, wonderful children. Your own, most of you, just because you're listening to me, are not dying or dead. We're alive. We can hear, some of us. Less, but we can hear. We can see with glasses, but we can see. Some of us. We can still walk. We can still eat. We can taste. There are lots of people around us. We're alive. And there are all of these wonderful things that we can look at and still be inspired to continue with greater courage and with greater hope. Sometimes we disregard the beautiful moon and we think everything has to be effort-based. To enjoy, we think we need a lot of effort. To be happy, we think requires a lot of effort and planning. To obtain, to be happy, to be something, to be somewhere, to get something, we become very, very much linear in that assumption. That it requires a lot of our own control and effort. Sometimes it's good to relax a little bit with it and to appreciate the knowledge and the wisdom of this great Zen teacher, who for him, the greatest happiness was enjoying the moon with or without the clothes. And the difference between a thief's approach is that happiness comes from obtaining something, having something, gaining something tangible in your hands. Even if it's a piece of paper, that we think that because it's tangible, because it's concrete, because it's in my hands, this is the source of my happiness. And in that moment, we forget to look at the blue sky, simple and ever present, and we don't appreciate that. At that moment, we don't stand up and feel the ground under our feet and find tremendous reason to be happy and hopeful and look forward with courage and find our peace and happiness in that. So this year, as you continue into 2017, join me and all of us in really celebrating and enjoying those simple things that are everywhere around us, that have enough power and reasons for us all to celebrate life with hope, with inspiration, with happiness. Look at things that are more close to you. Look at things that are immediately around you, and you will find many, many reasons why you can still continue in life with great courage, with great hope, with great happiness. Jatunla, all of us at Mindroling, monks and nuns, the Rinpoches, all of us gather here today to wish you all, wherever you are around the world, a very, very happy new year, and wish you all good health, good happiness. And I hope each one of you will spend the day enjoying the many blessings and the many good things that are in and around all of us, and work with those eight little things. And with all my love from Mindrolling, I send you my prayers and very best wishes.